Bridge Street Thursday night primary purpose group.
Yeah. Usually that gets a couple cheers and whoops.
All right. There we go. And one of the things that's been on his mind recently is step 12. He really likes to get into service and help others. So tonight, guys, give a big round of applause to Nick.
Yeah, I'm Nick, alcoholic, recovered alcoholic. I want to thank Bill for asking me to share tonight. I want to thank Valley Group for having me tonight. I remember, you know, I've been in now for about 15 years, and I remember when I was first asked to speak in the beginning. And I remember I would take the whole day just to reflect and, you know, think about, you know, what am I going to share about? And I mean, it was borderline obsession, you know, just making sure I'm just, what am I going to say? I got to say it right. I remember, you know, thinking I got to jot down notes. And when I'd get up here, I would not discuss anything that was on the notes, you know. I've been doing it for a while lately, so I really don't think about what I'm going to say. You know, I get up here and I just invite God in, and I come up to you. I come up here as an alcoholic, hoping that you find some hope in my share, that you find some similarities in my story, that maybe you can walk away tonight with some good considerations. You know, a little bit about myself. You know, I'm from Ohio. I'm representing tonight. Yeah, I'm from Toledo, Ohio. I've actually been in this area longer than I was in Toledo. I moved here when I was 19. And, you know, one thing that's interesting is my mom thought it was so cute because since I was a little kid, I always told her I'm going to move to California. And I ended up in California. And I mean, I've been here almost all my life. But Toledo, a little bit from where I'm from, it's real cold. And, you know, the type of things that we would do is we'd find things to do inside. So we were avid pool players. We played a lot of pool and pool halls. But one thing we really like to do is we like to get someone to, you know, buy us beer somewhere, and we would drink down at this place called Willie's Park, and it was so cold. But one thing I remember about the alcohol, you know, it's used a lot in AA about it being liquid courage, but one thing I noticed even early on in my drinking, just a second. I'm a stickler for ending on time, so I just want to make sure I'm mindful of the time. But one thing I knew, one thing I found out about alcohol is it just sort of made me somebody that I couldn't be without it. And I'm talking about even from a younger age. You know, I remember just sort of being awkward as a kid. You know, there was always something sort of missing. And later in life, a lot of kids feel the same way, but, you know, they find baseball, right? They find sports of some kind, and that helps complete their lives. But mine was drinking. You know, I remember even as early as junior high when I would drink at a party. Man, I could hit on any girl. I could start a fight with any dude. I mean, I was the life of the party. It completed me. You know, and in retrospect, that just isn't normal. And I think a lot of us can relate to that even as early as we can remember drinking, I don't know, it just empowered us. It was a power in my life. You know, and one story in the big book that I really use to sort of see how my drinking progressed is just using Bill's story. You know, Bill's story talks about him, you know, coming out as a soldier and having a high self-esteem of himself. He found drinking. He's all of a sudden working on Wall Street. He's, you know, enjoying his drinking. But there's some point in his drinking where the empowerment that he was getting from alcohol now became a power over his life. And that's what happened to me. You know, in high school, alcohol worked. You know, it was my solution. And though I was sort of building that same boomerang that Bill talks about, you know, that it was going to come back and hit me the way it did, I really didn't see the destruction that it was causing at a gradual pace. And I remember it, when I turned 22 and I ended up with a fiance out here in this area, I remember her getting sort of concerned about my drinking. And at the time, I didn't find my drinking objectionable. You know, and I think that's a problem that we sort of fall into is other people start seeing the problem before we even do. You know, people start seeing or they start scratching their head at us and really wondering what's going on before we do. You know, I always think, you know, once we wake up to what this disease is doing to us, it's already too late. You know, maybe there was some time that we could have stopped this from progressing to the point that it did, right? Maybe something could have happened in high school, a consequence, or something that may have made us stop. But for some reason, if you guys are sitting in here tonight, you're probably one of those type of people that, you know, didn't see that stuff happening. And I remember, you know, my girlfriend, my fiance, you know, getting real concerned because, I mean, you know, my drinking became continuous. You know, I was drinking to a point where, you know, when we would be sleeping, she'd have to make sure that I'm on my side because I threw up at night, you know, and she became my babysitter, you know. It gets to a point where alcohol is really cool and then it starts to get real gross, right? It really becomes it gets disgusting. Right. You know, towards the end of my drinking, I'd wake up and first thing I would do would grab my wallet and see how much money I spent, whether I had a wallet or not. What did I say to somebody? You know, am I late for work? You know, whatever it was. And I remember when my drinking got really bad, where I started to actually say to myself, you know, I'm done. I think most of us can relate to that where we really begin to wake up to what the alcohol is doing and we say to ourselves, you know what, this just isn't working anymore, man. It just isn't working. You know, I remember I would wake up in the morning so hungover and really just concentrating just to exist, right? Just to be able to be even stay in the moment and brushing my teeth and gagging on the toothbrush. And alcohol was the furthest from my mind. And I mean, at that time, thinking I'm done, it was insane for me to think that I'd ever go back to the alcohol again. And I did this numerous times. And I would say to myself, you know what, I'm done. And that is a really good thought to have, right? We want to be at that point where we're saying, you know, alcohol is killing us. I mean, that when I'm working with a guy, you know, I'm wanting him to tell me that I got to stop. You know, Nick, I got to stop. I can't go on like this. You know, I mean, those are things I want to hear. So when I would say that to myself in the morning, I meant it. You could hook me up to a lie detector test. I was being sincere with you. I wanted to quit, right? But see, I have something called a mental obsession to alcohol, right? Which basically tells me, whether it's that afternoon or a week from now or a month from now, all of a sudden, I think it's a sane idea that I can actually drink it. So that's what I fell into, right? I had what was called a physical craving that once I put it in my system, I can't control the amount I take once it's in my system. And I had a mental obsession that always brought me back to the first drink, right? Those two work hand in hand. They're like a tag team. Right? You've got this idea that maybe it's going to be different this time. I've been away from it long enough. The boss is off my back. The wife is off my back. I'm out of the doghouse. I'm not sleeping on the couch anymore. She's letting me come to bed. You know, whatever it is, we start thinking that, you know what? It's not so bad. Right? So that idea of quitting now becomes insane to us. Right? We think that maybe we overreacted to it. You know, maybe because things are going so good right now, I can't pick up that drink with impunity, right? And that's what I did over and over. It was a circle of insanity. And you know, what's funny is there are certain things about this disease that I really didn't know, especially in the first step. You know, they talk about how we suffer from a threefold disease. So,
that was new to me. And when it was explained to me, it made a lot of sense. So I have this internal condition as well, right? I've got this internal condition that is just full of tons of selfishness and self-centeredness, right? I'm full of fear. I'm full of self-delusion, right? And that affects my personal relationships. That affects my emotional natures. I can't seem to be a help to real to anybody. I'm not happy with what I do for a living. Maybe I don't work at all. So I've got this internal condition that for years I treated with the solution of alcohol, right? So whenever I'd have that irritable, restless discontent that they talk about, you know, in AA, right? The thing that calmed those nerves was alcohol. Right. When I got irritable, restless, or discontent, alcohol would tell me that would fix it. Right. But the deceiving part of irritable, restless, discontent is I may not necessarily see it when it's happening. Right. So I can't go by the mantra of, you know, if you feel like drinking, just call me. Because what's going to happen is the alcoholic that I am, when I get to that point, I'm going to be convinced that I don't need to call you, that it's going to be different this time, right? So this irritable, restless discontent that they talk about in the big book, I was taught that it lays low below our level of consciousness, right? So a good example I would give is especially happens when I'm buying a new car, right? So Dawn and I go, we buy a new car. Now we're sitting and doing papers. Now we're signing papers. One of the first things that she does, is she puts her hand on my knee because it's bouncing, right? Because I'm nervous in there buying that car. So I'm a little irritable, restless, discontent. Well, I don't notice it until she touches my leg, right? So that's sort of my point is when I'm having this irritable, restless, discontent, and Fred and Jim in the big book talk about having that irritable, restless, discontent, that those are the type of things that bring us into another drink, right? Well, I don't see that stuff happen, right? I don't see the stop. I don't see the red lights. I don't see people waving and telling me, Nick, don't drink. Don't drink. Because I've got this mental obsession that turns the sane thought into the insane thought. So if I'm going through or I'm going to AA or I'm in church or I'm trying to stay sober and I've got the sane thought of not drinking and the insane thought is to never drink, guess what? All of a sudden, without me even knowing it, it can flip, right? So now I'm thinking, why would it hurt to drink again, right? That seems logical and sane. It's been doing so well. What seems insane to me is that I ever even made that resolution in the first place. And that's the way my drinking went. So long story short, I was in and out of AA for a while. I came into AA in my teens in Toledo, Ohio. My dad got sober. Before I knew it, I was sitting next to him in meetings, and Toledo AA was a little different back then than it is now. It was primarily all big book, all speaker meetings, very few discussion meetings. In the 80s, when I was going to meetings, there was a lot of people that were in World War II, and there was even a guy that collaborated with Dr. Bob on writing a spiritual book, and it was all really neat. But one thing, being a teenager, I really couldn't relate to the war record that these people had. I couldn't relate to the years of drinking that these guys did. So being in and out of AA, I sort of scratched my head to my alcoholism because I didn't really know how to truly define what an alcoholic was. You know, I definitely knew an alcoholic definitely had the trait of drinking too much, right? I definitely knew they would get problems, and I definitely had problems. But back to what I was talking about, when I finally realized how I was physically, mentally, and spiritually sick, that's when, with my sponsor for the last time 15 years ago, I was able to concede to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. Because I think the most important thing that I learned in step one was that not that I could drink, but I was going to go back to drink. There was going to, that step one where I was sitting knowing that truth It was a finite point of time because I was either to move forward through the steps or stay in step one and eventually drink again, right? What I learned in step one is that I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over choosing to drink alcohol. I'm powerless over the control that I have once I put it into my system. I'm powerless over trying to live life based on my own ideas, right? So the whole living life, the whole drinking part is encompassed by powerlessness. And I had to see that in all its glory. Because if I didn't, there'd be no necessity in me to seek the power that's in step two, right? And that's the thing. When I take people through the work, and I'm glad Israel brought it up, is, you know, it's sort of my job to make sure that my prospects are getting clear on their condition, right? Because if they're not, they're just going to get more confused as we go through the steps, right? I sort of compare it to like a snowball on a hill, right? So that snowball starts at the top. And imagine that little snowball beginning to roll over wet snow. And if that person is doing the steps and they're not really quite clear in their condition, that snowball just gets bigger and bigger. That confusion of what they're supposed to do begins to get to a point where they don't get through the work entirely, right? Or when they do, they're still not quite clear on what an alcoholic is, or maybe they're having a problem with God or believing in God, or, you know, they depend too much on people and not this reliance in God that the co-founders have, right? So, you know, when I take people through the work, I want to make sure they're clear that, you know, after step one, conceding that, you know, it's either live or die. Right? It's a dilemma. It's two alternatives we don't care for. It's either stay where we're at and die an alcoholic death, or take a spiritual road that we don't really know what that's about, but we're going to eventually have to trust it because that's really the only thing that's going to save our lives. And that's where I was. When I was at step one and I saw what was happening and I saw the destruction of this alcoholic torture and what was happening, I said, you know what? Let's keep going. God sounds pretty good right now. And that's what happened. And you know, finding a power greater than myself and just knowing that, you know, step two isn't about belief, right? It's about willingness. And I tell my sponsees that all the time, you know, that, you know, these steps is really baby steps, you know, and, you know, when we come into step two, I'm not expecting you to have any beliefs. I'm not, you know, whatever was impressed upon you, whatever ideas you had of God at this point, you're going to just set aside. This is about having a whole new experience. You know, that brings some hope and some levity to the steps when they know that, you know, wow, this is just about willingness. You know, and that's what step two was about. You know, when I got in there, one thing my sponsor said is that, all the ideas you have about God right now, man, you just lay that stuff aside. And that's what I did. Everything that was impressed upon me religiously, the agnosticism, the doubts that I had of God, when I saw what was happening in the world, you know, whatever it was, I laid it aside. And one of the things I learned in step two was that my old conception of God that I had all these years, right? And not a really good conception of God, right? I mean, I was raised Lutheran, and I remember one of the first things that happened to me is my best friend in my Lutheran church was being molested by our acolyte instructor. And I remember already thinking that religion is just, you know, churches are just full of pedophiles, you know, predators, scammers. You know, I had all these ideas about religion, but it was all on the outside. Right. I was trying to find God on all the outside stuff that was going on. But what was cool about step two is it's about eventually getting that relationship with this higher power. And it isn't about the stuff that I see on the outside. It's about God recreating me from within. You know, so I always looked outwards for God, not realizing that God always had a conscious contact with me. Right. But now, it's about me having an actual conscious contact with him. You know, God always had his grip on me. I'd be dead if he didn't. But God was now giving me the opportunity for me to seek him, to seek the power, begin to, you know, by seeking him, that shows how much I care for him, you know, and God really wants us to seek him out. God really wants us to need him, because as alcoholics, you know, we're not going to seek God, you know, out of virtue. We're going to seek God out of necessity, you know. So, you know, if there's some people out there that have some exception to that, that's okay, right? This is my story. This is what I had to do. You know, my home group primary purpose was sort of the last house on the block for me, because I had tried all of it in AA. I tried everything in AA. You know, I tried getting involved in general service as much as I could. I tried going to the meeting after the meeting. You know, I really honestly tried to really work that phone list. I just did so much in AA, but what I realized this last time around, it really had to be about me relying in God, right? And, you know, to make it simpler and maybe more familiar to people, I just had to find a reliance in a higher power, right? A conception of my own understanding, right? More of a liberal type of idea. You know, we don't even have to say God. You know, this is a power. I know one thing. I'm not the power. So I have to find a power greater than myself. And that's what I did. I did find a power greater than myself. So, you know, they call step two the cornerstone. And a cornerstone, you know, especially when you talk to a mason or a builder, a cornerstone is very important to a structure. Because what happens when you pull a cornerstone out of a structure, right? Especially like an arch, right? It's going to topple over, right? And a cornerstone has to make sure that it's laid on a very sturdy platform. So what the point I'm making is the platform is step one for me, right? Step one is that slab. If I'm really clear on the condition that I suffer from, I'm going to be able to put a solid cornerstone on that foundation. So I begin to build that spiritual structure that you're talking about. You know, I always tell my sponsees, you know, that the steps itself aren't really the work. You know, the steps prepare us for the work. I like to call going through the steps the spiritual boot camp. It really is. It gets us trained to go out here into the world and be of service to others. And ultimately, be of service to our higher power. You know, and I never really understood that until I got through the work. You know, when I made those amends and I really began to, you know, bask in the sunlight of the spirit, as they say. You know, I had quite a big laundry pile coming in here. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate. You know, that laundry pile is big. It's huge. Or that big stack of dishes we don't want to do. I remember one of my first jobs was the dishwasher. And I remember finally catching up and the busboys bringing in about 15 more tubs. I mean, it just would get me so mad. And, you know, that's what we've got to work with when we come into these steps, you know. But, man, it's amazing when you can clear those dishes enough, man, or, you know, get through that laundry pile enough to where God really begins to reveal to you who he would have you be. And for me, well, who he would have me be is, an alcoholic that can be in all three sides of the triangle today, you know. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm in recovery, you know, I'm in 10-11. You know, I try to sort of take my awakened spirit into the world, and I try to intuitively listen to God as I go throughout the day. You know, I got to stay in the present. You know, I don't want to time travel into the past or into the future. You know, it truly is. 10 and 11 are a practice. It really is. And if you're not practicing it and you think you can just do it once a week or once every month, it's going to be really hard to do. But really, I mean, this is a lot of work. You know, when we get through the work, we're taking this awakened spirit into the world, you know. So that's my recovery. And I really need to work with other alcoholics.
sucks, man.
It is something that I really feel that is part of that work that I really begin to wake up to in step three when I'm offering myself to God, right? He's my father, he's my principal, he's my employer, you know? And when I begin to see it that way, I'm working for God, you know, in AA. I'm working for God in my family life. I'm working for God in the business that I own. You know, he's my employer. And when I look at things like that, you know, I see that, you know, because I suffer from an affliction that kills people, you know, I really feel gravitated towards people that have suffered from the same things I did. And given the tools that I was given by my sponsor, you know, I feel that it is a dire necessity that I give freely to those guys that was freely given to me. You know, and I remember, you know, just to sort of talk about some of the things that I've gotten back as a result of going through the work. You know, things just, you know, they talk about a broad highway. You know, they talk about, you know, how when you get on this road, you know, it just broadens, right? And it does. Opportunity is endless. There's no ceiling to how far you can go. You know, there's no longer that agnostic spirit that I had where I thought there was a limit to my spiritual growth, right? Sometimes we like to do that. Things are so good. How can they get any better, right? It's a good saying, but at the same time, we are putting a ceiling on that spiritual growth, right? Agnosticism to me isn't so much doubting God. What can happen, even in my sobriety today, I can get untreated. I can get away from doing the work, and that unmanageable life can come back, that internal condition that I was talking about. And that agnosticism comes back, and what that agnosticism can look like for me today is like, God just can't get me out of this one. You know, I've been trying so hard, I don't know if God's listening, right? I think I'm stuck with this job for the rest of my life, right? These are things, thoughts that we can have in our head, even with some time under our belt, you know? But what I know today is that agnosticism, once that's removed, right? Once I'm really walking, you know, once I'm really there in tune with God in the moment, each and every day, and listening to that intuitive voice, there's no ceiling to my spiritual growth anymore. You know, there just isn't. Things just keep getting better. You know, I remember when I came in 15 years ago, unemployed for like 7 years, you know, never feeling employable, you know, a college dropout. You know, it was really hard, you know, seeing my wife take care of me all those years. But when I came in here and got this message, all of a sudden I had a job. And, dude, it was the suckiest job, man. I worked at this chrome plating place, man. I mean, I could not get the grime off my hands. I mean, Dawn, could I get the grime off my hands? I mean, it was but, man, just the idea of having a job, it was awesome. I mean, I was bringing home income. You know, and then before I know it, you know, I'm cleaning windows again. And that's something, you know, I used to do high rise window cleaning. So I got back into doing that again. And then all of a sudden, you know, I joined this leads group and I started a little small little window cleaning business. And I'm part of a leads group, EATC, that meets here in Visalia. They're a Visalia group. And we're all a different vocation. We're all a different type of company. And we try to help us each other get leads. And I started as a small little window cleaning business. And at the time I was still working with others, had a home group, and all of a sudden, before I know it, it turned into a janitorial business. And the revenue just started getting bigger and better. And I went from, you know, really small revenue where I'm just doing jobs, you know, here and there to now I'm statewide. And a lot of people ask me, you know, how'd you get where you're at right now? I mean, was it a lot of hard work? And honestly, it hasn't been. You know, growing this business, I really feel like God grew this business. You know, I definitely put in the effort. You know, when I would get those customers, I made sure that I took care of them. I made sure that, you know, if they called me, I call him back within the next 15 minutes. You know, but those were principles that I learned in AA. You know, I took the principles that I knew in AA and I brought that into my business and it just exploded. Right. And it was amazing because I don't even know how I got to where I'm at. Honestly, I'm not bragging. I'm not trying to brag. What I'm trying to say is something is just amazingly came into my life and it is flourished. It has been nothing but a gift from God. And I mean, I've been able to buy a house. I've got grandkids. I've got these beautiful relationships in my life. You know, not only am I working with other alcoholics, but man, I'm watching my grandkids grow up. They're coming over. They're sleeping over. I'm helping Dawn babysit. You know, I'm just living a life that 15 years ago, I could never see myself living. I could never see myself responsible enough to even own a business, let alone being a homeowner. You know, I've got contractors that I take care of very well. I make sure that they get paid. I just practice principles in all my affairs to the best of my ability, right? And it's so important for me to know that, you know, I just don't live AA in here, right? I just don't show up here, you know, drink the coffee, talk to people. And when I go out those doors, you know, now I become an asshole to my family. I'm cheating on my taxes, right? Or I'm gambling or whatever it is. You know, I'm making sure I really try to make sure or keep myself in check through prayer and meditation that who I am right now, to the best of my ability, I try to be that same person out there. You know, I try to be that same person in my business. I try to be that same person when I'm with my grandkids. I try to be that person when I'm working with my customers or my contractors, right? I not only am I trying to stay mindful in here, but I also need to stay mindful out there, right? This is a life or death, Aaron, even with 15 years, right? God can take, I can lose all of that much quicker than I gained it. Right. I told you about the things that I've gotten through the years. I could lose all of that stuff really quick. And, you know, when it really comes down to that's just all stuff. But my family isn't just stuff. Right. You guys ain't just stuff. Right. But all that material stuff, you know, I could lose it. But what's really most important to me is losing the ones I love. And really more than anything, you know, dying an alcoholic death. You know, alcoholic deaths, man, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes. You know, I've seen it through the 15 years of being sober. I've seen people die alcoholic deaths without ever having to pick up a drink again. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of people will quit thinking that's just the problem, but they don't do anything else. And that unmanageability becomes so strong and so prevalent in their lives. And all of a sudden, maybe one day we don't see you at a meeting. And then all of a sudden we get curious and we might ask somebody, hey, man, have you seen, you know, Joe or Karen or whoever, man? And then they tell you things like, yeah, they committed suicide. You know, they took pills, right? Or whatever it is. There's been about 5 suicides I've seen in AA with people that never picked up a drink again. And that's the way they went out. You know, don't ever think for a second that alcohol needs, that spiritual malady, that this internal needs alcohol to take you out. You know, it can take you out in many other ways, you know. So through the years, that's really helped me respect it in a way that, you know what, it's real. You know, even with the amount of sobriety that I have, that alcoholic torture, that dying an alcoholic death isn't too far away. Right. But I know today that I've got a power in my life that can keep me sober for good and all. Right. And a lot of people will say, well, you know, that's being pretty cocky thinking you're going to stay sober for good and all. Well, talks about Dr. Bob drinking, stopping never to drink again. You know, our co-founders talked about stopping and never to drink again, right? Can I go? Can I drink again? Probably. I'm not saying I can't, but you know what? As long as I stay close to that which is already keeping me sober, then I'm going to be all right. You know, that's one thing I know today. I don't keep myself sober today, right? When I almost died from that drug and alcohol overdose 15 years ago, and I almost asphyxiated, you know, and when the paramedics got there, they said if they would have gotten there 10 minutes too late, I would have been dead, right? That was God removing me from alcohol. That was not a choice. I remember going into detox and sort of trying to negotiate with God a little bit, because I remember being in there with my gown. I was under suicide watch, and I remember hearing sort of a voice. It was me, but it definitely felt like it popped in and said, "Hey, Nick, this is enough. You're done." And I remember trying to negotiate with that voice, because I was like, no, I'm only 33 years old, man, you know. But I remember it coming right back to me, "Nick, you're done. Right. That was God separating me from alcohol. That was not a choice. Because I'll tell you what, before I had that alcohol drug overdose, I always thought that if it gets bad enough, I can always come back to AA. Well, this is the way I came back to AA. Was almost dying. And it didn't feel like a choice this time. You know, I was finally desperate. Something had to give. And that's what I think it takes in all of us, is that it gets to a point where, you know, we have to be desperate. And, you know, people ask sometimes, you know, well, what's the difference between hopelessness and desperation? Because hopelessness I felt in my 20s. You know, when I was hurting my girlfriend with my drinking back then, there was part of me that wanted to quit. And I saw that I couldn't. So there was hopelessness early in my drinking career. But what differentiates that from desperation? Well, for me, it's when that hopelessness becomes completely unacceptable. And that's what happened, man. That hopelessness became, you know what, something's got to give, I want to live. And that's what brought me in this last time. So for you guys that are sort of teetering on, you know, is this where I need to be, you know, I definitely don't believe in forcing you to be here. You know, I definitely am a firm believer that I need to find my truth out there before I can find my truth in here. And what that means is I got to make sure that I've done all my drinking out there. Right? Because if I didn't, and there's still alternatives out coming back into these rooms, those alternatives are going to drive me right back out. That's what always happened. I came in because of a girl. I came in because I didn't want to lose a job. I came in just because how I felt. I came in because I just wanted a little bit of a reprieve, right? There were times I'd come in not even expecting to really stay, just to sort of sober, you know, just be around some positive people and then go back out, right? Whatever it was. If there were alternatives and I wasn't done, I went back out. And, you know, some of you guys might even be, you know, wondering, you know, this is a cool place to be, but man, this spiritual side, you know, I'm not sure about. And that's okay too. But I guarantee you, if God chases you out of these doors, booze is going to chase you right back in. Right? So we really got to make sure that we're done. Or at least for me, I had to make sure that I was done until I really became open-minded to the things that I needed to hear to bring me to the place that I am today. Right. So I'm going to end with this. You know, like I said, this is my story. This is how I had to do it. But one thing I definitely have learned to grow, to appreciate, is one's own autonomy. So, you know, whatever you're doing today that's working, you keep doing it. You know, there's no reason to try to sell you something that you don't need. You know, if nothing's broken in your program and it's working, you keep doing it. You keep doing it. The one thing I would say is that if it's not, right, if you're feeling like you've tried everything, and it hasn't worked. We're always happy to have you down at Primary Purpose that meets on Thursday night at Bridge Street. You know, I know a lot of people, a lot of groups will send people to us. It's funny. You know, we'll get people from groups, but, you know, I've always loved this group. I've always loved Bill's group. You know, I think I've shared for this home group, I think this might be my third time sharing. So, you know, but really through the years, I've really grown to appreciate all of AA, you know, and if it's working for you, I mean, shoot, that's awesome, you know, and when I hear God and when I hear the word God and how people rely on God and how they love God, I just love hearing things like that too, you know, so, you know, I really want to appreciate Valley Group for having me. These are things that I feel like we need to do from time to time. So, again, my name is Nick, and I am an alcoholic, and thank you for letting me share. All right.